LT, there's a guest we have coming up on the show today, Bill Hunter, not from the Oilers organization, the WHA, but Bill Hunter, who is a historian specifically on Lou Gehrig. And I know as a baseball guy, Al, like Bill knows everything about Lou Gehrig. Is there one baseball player you'd want to know more about?
Well, Gehrig is so interesting because his numbers, I think I've got this right. There was a year where he had like 103 RBIs on the road. And like you're like, what? Come on. But it's there are some things about Gehrig that are so astronomical statistically that they just jump off the page when you're reading about them. He was an amazing, amazing baseball player. As far as what, you know, the things that I would like to know, one of the players who in my lifetime has fascinated me most of all, I read about him, I read about his delivery, his windup, why it was almost perfect. If you'd, you know, invented a computer for a pitcher's windup, he ended up being pretty close to perfect. And that's Nolan Ryan. Only because, Jason, he was, you know, he was on the Mets in 69. By 73 or 4, he was pitching no-hitters for the Angels and doing it fairly consistently. But he was a wonderful pitcher forever. And you know, I in a way, I don't think we'll ever see anybody like him. Now, he pitched in an era where a lot of guys could, you know, have complete games or whatever. But my memory of Nolan Ryan was that he was the one pitcher I ever saw where no matter who he was up against, whatever hitter was at the plate, Ryan still had the advantage. He was that overpowering.
Hmm. Well, man, he was just a flamethrower at times. There's no doubt about it.
And he's wild, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I noticed, Al, you got to get into the NHL draft. What do you think, you know, the NFL's first. What do you think, then the CFL, what do you think is going to happen with all these leagues and their drafts this year?
Well, I think the NFL, they've sort of tipped their hand in that they're going to go ahead with it. So it'll probably be, a lot of war room photography, right? Like where you've got, here we are with the Giants and you know, Strutty will be able to look at a floor with a bunch of people wandering around and a gigantic depth chart. I think it'll be a television event, but obviously there's not going to be fans there or anything like that, so it won't be the usual massive thing. CFL, they could do that online. They have. The NHL is going to be interesting. I'm trying to remember, and you probably will remember this better than me, Jason, when they came out of the lockout, they sort of had I think maybe the first round guys were there and that was it, but it was a different kind of event coming out of the lockout, as I recall.
Oh yeah, it was in Montreal. It was basically just in a hotel.
Yeah,
and they had I think they had like maybe the top 20, maybe the top 10 players. Like Crosby was there and Bobby Ryan and a few of those guys. But
so I think we'll see. I mean, the NHL one's going to be interesting because I think they're still holding on to hope that they could, you know, play a season and move that back a little bit. Whenever we talk about NHL drafts, I always remember the year Kevin Lowe was drafted, which would be 79, the first year the Oilers were in it, and I think he was either in school or at home, and his agent gave him an idea about when he would get drafted, and as it turned out, there was an hour delay, so he kept not hearing, and he thought, oh my God, I'm in the third round or whatever, and he got drafted in the first round, but he didn't find out until an hour later because of the delay getting the draft started, which he didn't know about.
Al Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide, joins us. You started looking at the draft a little bit, Al. It's funny, and I spoke to two scouts beforehand because, and luckily, just kind of before everything shut down, two amateur scouts, and I asked them, okay, like, how deep is this draft? And it was interesting. One guy told me, he goes, you know what, I think there's about 24 players and then there's a drop-off. And really from, you know, second, third, fourth round, there's going to be a lot of change. And the other guy told me 23. So both of them had a fairly similar number in their head of guys they thought were okay, this is where the line is, and then there's a little bit of a fall. And both said they didn't think it was an overly deep draft based on talent today. What are you hearing?
Well, that's sort of what, you know, what I hear is that there are lots of forwards. Like in this year's draft, if you're drafting where the Oilers are and you're looking for a forward, and they may be, this is probably going to be a draft where you're going to get a player that you really like. The group of defensemen is maybe they've not shown themselves totally yet, or at least at the level you want them to, and they're not going to have a chance to, maybe, because we don't have the European spring tournaments. We don't have the WHL, OHL, and Q playoffs, so it's going to be a little different. But I think we're going to get three or four defensemen taken in the first round, which is going to be low, and maybe a goalie, but I think it's going to be mostly forwards. And what the math says is there's probably over 15 forwards who are legit, who are going to be at least coming into pro hockey, perceived as being offensive players.
Al Mitchell, aka Low Tide, joined. Like, the Oilers have to take a forward, don't they?
Well, they did last year.
I can't see them draft another defenseman.
They did last year too, though, and they didn't. You know, I mean, I thought they were going to take a USHL forward, and they ended up taking Roberg. You know, they're loaded. I mean, they have, if Broberg develops, Jason, let's say he spends another year in Sweden, and then he comes over and spends a half a year in the AHL, and then he's ready. They have Nurse, Klefbom, and Caleb Jones already lined up on that left side. This team has real depth, like not pretend depth. They've got real depth on defense if Broberg develops as he should, based on where he is. And then on the other side, you've got Bouchard with, I assume, Ethan Bear, and then, you know, maybe you have one of your current veterans as the third guy. They have enough depth on defense that they could trade somebody a year from now, I think. Really good a year from now.
Yeah, that's very fair. But I think it's obvious that they need some forward depth, no question about it.
Yeah.
And I think they will likely address that. Because, you know, they don't have a second rounder. And the third round pick, Al, if the season doesn't pick up, I can't see any way that they would have to give up that third rounder for James Neal. There's nothing in the wording that says prorated or anything. Now, I know this is an unprecedented situation, but I can't see how it would be a guarantee, because you don't know for sure that James Neal would have scored two more goals. We don't know for sure.
No, I think what will happen, this is just me guessing, but in baseball, they hand out compensatory picks. So it would go like this. Instead of the third round pick going from Edmonton to Calgary for James Neal, at the end of the third round, like at 93, Calgary would get a compensatory pick at 94. It would go in before the start of the fourth round. Baseball does that all the time, and I honestly think that's how the NHL would. It's the easiest way to do it. Instead of picking, you know, that third round pick would probably be 85 if the Oilers sent it. They end up getting 94. Big whoop. That's the easiest way of doing it. It extends the draft a little bit, because there may be other teams who've done the same thing, but it's quick and clean, and people will bitch, but it's not that big a deal.
Yeah, that's fair. You know what? Never even thought of the compensatory one. That makes a lot of sense. I could see that for sure. The interesting one for the CFL, the NHL is one thing because they're trying to finish a season. The CFL is just trying to start it. Could you see the CFL maybe just going to a 12-game season? I would think that if it's delayed, they don't want to just write off their whole season either. They're just going to have to delay it.
I think that's a great point. And then it comes down to, how many games do you need to make, like, a football season? And 12 is a good number, I think, because you'd see everybody in your division, what, twice, and then maybe you'd play everybody in the other division once, and you there should be at least some separation. You'd be able to if you won the division, for instance, let's say Edmonton wins the West after 12 games with a record of 9-3. Well, that's pretty dominant, right? And you know, 12 games, you've beaten yourself up enough over the summer that you have enough injuries that you're probably the depth of your team has shown, the quality of your team has shown, because you've had to replace players right along. So I think 12 is a good number. 14 would be preferable, obviously, but 12 is good.
What do you make of Brady officially now in Tampa Bay?
It's weird. You know, Jason, I've been thinking about this. I remember Plunkett was drafted by New England, but he wasn't very good. And when he went to Oakland, he was sort of like, well, he's a spent force. And then he started winning Super Bowls. But he was, you know, he wasn't at the age that like George Blanda was still kicking and maybe quarterbacking a little bit. But Brady is, like, I just don't know what his second chapter is going to look like. I worry that it's going to be injury riddled and not take long. But I mean, if they can, you know, put a scheme in that he's familiar with, and if they can load up the offensive line with enough protection, and they can find enough bullets and somebody in the backfield, you know, I mean, I'm intrigued by it. I'll say that I didn't think Tampa Bay would be his destination, but now I'm intrigued by what he might be able to do down there, and I'm also interested in what Belichick will do in New England, because so far, I mean, unless something's happened in the last hour or so when I wasn't real close to, you know, the sporting world, it sounds like they're either going to draft somebody and go with what they have, or you know, maybe take somebody of the group available. There's like three or four that are interesting. Maybe they grab one of those, but New England's next step is going to be fascinating.
I'd still go Jameis Winston, but maybe I'm in the minority on that one.
Great,
but man,
talent.
I think Jameis Winston has a lot of ability and talent, and it's, you know, you just look at his numbers with Tom Brady last season. I know it was ESPN stats put out. I know that you know, the next gen stats they have now at the NFL, and they talked about throwing balls into a tight window. Winston had the exact same success rate as Brady last year. Exact same. Now, where Winston struggled, obviously he threw more interceptions, but he also threw 1,000 more yards on basically the same amount of attempts, right? He had 9 more touchdown passes. So, you know, there's, I think, and plus Al, he couldn't see. He had to get eye surgery. So I think you might be able to get Jameis Winston on probably a really good contract for NFL standards. And find a young guy who just maybe can be coached up. And if the eyesight was an issue, and it might be, I have no idea, right? All I do know is I've talked to people who thought they could see, and then all of a sudden they got their eyes done. They're like, man, you know, like people who fought against getting glasses, right? Like my brother-in-law, he needs them, right? He's getting a little bit older and he doesn't want to wear them. And I'm like, once you get them, trust me, it's like, holy geez, it's a whole new world.
It's my favorite part of the Jason Gregor show, outing family members. That's very, very, very good. But you're right. The one thing I worry about with Belichick is I do think he's a like, genius is overused, but he's a football genius. And what you just said is exactly the kind of thinking he does, I think. I as soon as he signs somebody, I'm going to go, oh, I knew it. And it's because of stuff like that. You know, not to be trusted for the rest of the league, because I do think he works on another level. And you know, everybody's talking about, well, you know, they got to get a guy who kind of fits the New England Patriots style. I think he'll bring in, like you say, Winston. I think he'll bring him in and he'll manicure what they have and make it more adaptable to Winston. And the worry that I have is, like, I know everybody in the AFC East, like, I know you'd cheer for Cincinnati, but if you were a fan of Miami, you'd be thrilled about the fact that Brady's out of the league, or if you were a Bills fan, you'd be thrilled that Brady's no longer in that division. But I worry that as you said, there's somebody out there, and Belichick is just waiting till the price goes down to as low as possible. He's going to grab him, and they'll be 12-4 here again.
Well, I look at it. The Buffalo Bills, for sure, I think, are doing cartwheels. I'm not sure the Jets or the Dolphins really matter in that division right now. The Chiefs, Al. Cheer for the Chiefs, not the Bengals. But I'll say this, though. You know what about the AFC, Al? I think there was talk about Brady maybe going to San Diego or Tampa Bay. I look at the AFC right now, and I think there's a much easier path there to have success. The NFC is loaded. I think there's way more competitive teams in the NFC.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the division I follow really closely is the NFC East, and I think Dallas still has some holes, but they should be the favorite. But the other two divisions, the other divisions in the NFC are there's at least one phenomenal team, and you know, I mean, if you look at, like, San Francisco last year, if you look at New Orleans, if you look at what's happening up north, there's probably four or five teams that could, and they'll beat the hell out of each other in the playoffs, right? So
yep.
Your man Andy Reid might be celebrating twice in a row here.
Well, you never know. It's pretty tough to go back-to-back, but we'll see. Al, it is Pause of Friday, and there's a story that has just come out that's pretty cool. The warehouse at Edmonton's Food Bank is filling up with donations from local restaurants and food service providers who are closed because of COVID-19. And so, because I know there was, you know, people were concerned about, you know, the less fortunate and getting them some food at this time. So in a dire time, I think, you know, Edmontonians and Albertans have really stepped up for one another, and I think that's going to continue. So that's an awesome note in what has been obviously a troubling week.
You know, the one thing about, I am not an Edmontonian. I was born in BC and I grew up in Saskatchewan, but I was here on Black Friday and I was here in the aftermath of that, and the community spirit from top to bottom, from the folks who are the movers and shakers down to the folks who were just, you know, driving their pickups and taking supplies where they needed to be, and that's Edmonton. I think it's partly, Jason, because we're farther north, we're a little isolated, and we're used to having to do things on our own. But I'm very proud of Edmonton, always have been. It's a great city to live and to raise your kids. And this is another example. And I'm not surprised at all, but I am delighted to hear that.
And Al, you might be the best person to ask this before we go, but the Senators and the Kings, when they played March 11th, that's the last professional sports game that we've seen, you know, here in Canada, the U.S. And the last time there was no game in the major sports in the month of April was 1883. What were you doing back then, Al, when you were watching?
I was trying to help Wee Willie Keeler hit them where they ain't, is what I was trying to do. I actually, my dad wasn't even born. He was born in 1912, so that's how long ago that was. That's like three generations of my family ago.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? So that's how big of an issue this is when you think about it. And you know, right now it doesn't look like there's going to be any professional sports played in the four major ones. And you know, I think UFC is maybe still going on. Wrestling, I know they had done a few shows. Wrestling's obviously a little bit different. It's more entertainment than a sport, and that's fine. I'm not knocking wrestling, but I'm just saying it's this, you know, unprecedented times for sure, and so we all have to adapt.
Well, the other thing is that the great thing about baseball is, even though they came into existence about a half an hour after the NL, when the American League gets back, it's still the junior circuit. That's the way it works.
Al, great stuff, man. Have a good weekend. We'll chat with you Monday.
All right, Jason. Have a good one.